Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to An Adventure in History. We really have an adventure tonight because I am solo hosting for the first time in history. But my guest is here laughing and smiling because she's along for the journey, Lexi Hallahan. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for the fun invitation. I appreciate it.
And we're going to talk, because you own Northwest Women's Surf Camps, mm-hmm. So we're going to talk surfing, ocean, why you live here, mm-hmm. history, mm-hmm. all the things.
Oh, great. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. So we don't have Mac, but we don't need Mac, right? I mean, we love him, but he did leave us this day in history because he is the curator of this usually.
Okay.
So he comes up with this day in history and then what he thinks is the most influential. But we're going to start. So this is for tomorrow, February 17th. Things that you can bring up when you're going out to lunch, trivia, all the fun things, conversation starters. And he started back in 1621.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Yeah. That's usually what I say because I was in the 1600s. Miles Standish is elected as the first commander of the Plymouth Colony. Hmm. Miles Standish. Okay. 1801, Thomas Jefferson is elected the third U.S. president. Number three. Mm-hmm. He's probably in Mac's top 10 list, Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. He's got a list of favorites.
Oh, I see.
1815, Treaty of Ghent, ratified by the U.S. Senate and signed by President Madison, ending the War of 1812 more than a month after being signed in Europe. Hmm. 1864, Confederate submarine CSS H.L. Hunley sinks Union ship Houstonic, at Charleston, South Carolina, in the world's first successful submarine attack.
Wow.
Crews of both vessels were killed. Mm-hmm. 1864.
Wow.
I wouldn't have guessed that. Mm-mm. For a submarine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, obviously pretty horrific too. 1883, Arthur Ashwell patents the vacant/engaged toilet lock in London, England.
I'd love to see a picture of that one.
Thank you, Arthur. Vacant/engaged. I like the choice of words, too. How do you think he came up with that? Like, okay, I'm going to create a sign. I'm previously engaged at the moment. Or it's vacant. Okay. Thank you, Arthur. We do appreciate that. 1913, Oregon becomes the second state to enact minimum wage law.
Wow.
Yeah. 1913. Go Oregon. Mm-hmm. 1933, the first issue of Newsweek magazine is published.
I read that.
That was a good one. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's in print
anymore.
I don't think it is anymore.
No, I don't think
so. But is it digital?
I don't know.
You know, when magazines switched to digital, I just couldn't jump on board.
Mm-hmm. Me
Even
either.
The page-for-page versions, mm-hmm.
I like to read things with a tangible experience. You know?
I know, but it is so going, I mean, mm-hmm. it's aging us,
yep.
right? Dating us.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. 1972, the Beetle overtakes Model T as the world's best-selling car. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
The Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the thing that Mac believes has the most influence in impact in history is 1897, the National Organization of Mothers, formed in America by Alice McClellan Birney and Phoebe Apperson Hearst. And this is also known as the PTA.
Oh.
The Parent Teacher Association.
It was actually, it started there as the National Organization of Mothers.
Of Mothers.
Wow.
Of Mothers,
I
yeah.
never knew that.
Of Mothers formed in America. So that was the, obviously, the Parent Teacher Association, PTA, was created 1897.
Wow. A little history along with our history today.
I know. I love that. Well, and also go women.
Yeah.
For the 1800s, the new, already yeah. back then, there needed to be an organization connecting teachers
and
to
parents.
To the caregivers at
yeah.
home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we are just going to jump right into to you, and we're going to talk about you.
Okay.
So let's first start with how you ended up here on the North Coast.
Well, I was raised in, I was born in Seattle, Washington, and when I was about 7, we moved to Portland, and I grew up in Lake Oswego, outside of Portland, a suburb up there, and my first year of college, I went to University of Oregon, and I entered into the recreation department because I loved The Love Boat on TV, if you remember that. You might be a little young for that, but I loved how the woman on it, she took everybody around on these beautiful cruise ships and would teach them play and recreation on the ship, and I always had the idea of being a recreation director. So I went my first year to University of Oregon, but I was putting myself through college and getting some grants and student loans, and I just didn't feel like the program was at the level that I was really seeking for the amount of money I was paying for my college.
Sure.
And so I decided to do a whole new thing, and I moved over to Hawaii, and I started on into the University of Hawaii campus programs there. And I pursued writing for a while, journalism for a while, was kind of a little bit shifting around in my major. Meantime, I had left Honolulu, where I'd been living for a couple of years, and I moved out to what they call the North Shore.
Yeah.
And in the surfing world, the North Shore is like the epicenter of where amazing surf is. There's it's probably 8 or 9 mile stretch of area on that side of the island that has just premier surfing from famous places like Sunset Beach and Pipeline, Waimea. Those are some names a lot of people have heard before. Maybe they've visited and seen it. And so I moved to the North Shore, and I needed to get a job. So my first job and the main job I had there was working at Arisha's Beach Inn Kitchen. And this was this amazing all-women kitchen. And there were bakers and cookie makers, and there were sandwich makers. And I ended up managing that for Arisha. And it was so fun working with all these women in this vegetarian, just adorable kitchen. And so I worked there for a few years. Arisha ended up deciding she was going to move back to California, and she wanted to sell her business. So after that, a lot of the families came up to me who used to eat there almost regularly. There on the North Shore, we pretty much fed everybody on the North Shore because it was kind of the only real healthy food establishment. And some people started coming to me and asking me, you know, would you cook for me, for our families? Like, would you prepare meals so that I don't have to cook and we can have some of the healthy meals that Arisha used to do? And so in a very short time, I had about 15, 20 clients, and I became a personal chef very unexpectedly.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like Arisha left the kitchen, and I got approached by a lot of the people who loved Arisha's food, and I started becoming a personal chef there.
So from recreation to personal chef.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first part.
On the North Shore of Hawaii.
Yeah.
It sounds like a movie plot, TV show, right?
Yeah. Eventually, I'm going to write a book, and I'm going to have some of these wonderful short stories because it's a lot of fun. And when I share with my students in our camps and stuff, they're always like, you've got to write a book, Lex. And I'm like, okay, well, when I get some time, I'll write a book.
So at this point, you're not in college anymore.
Yeah. So okay. I'm finishing what the standard college that people go through. But I still hadn't really honed in on what I really wanted to be my degree. And so my mother had sent me a little flyer that she had seen there in Portland about up-and-coming careers in the nation. And in those days, you know, we didn't have computers. So, you know, things were sent by mail.
Right.
So, you know, this is like 1979, 1980, you know, 81. And so she sent me over this pamphlet, and I was reading through it, and I saw this one career. It was called dietetic technician or dietetic technology. And there was a huge need for it in the nation. And so I just kind of looked in and started checking that out and realized, wow, this sounds like a lot what I'm really into, like nutrition, people helping them with their healthy eating practices. Nutrition and how being healthy, if you eat well, you feel well. And then there was also some clinical stuff. And the whole thing sounded really intriguing. And it was a 2-year accelerated program in Portland, Oregon, where I was from.
Okay.
So I asked my then boyfriend, now husband, Tom, if he wanted to come back with me to Oregon and check it out. And, you know, it was the middle of going into the summertime. And he said, no, I'm going to hang out on Oahu. And I said, okay, I'll work. You know, I'll just kind of go back and forth when I get time off from school or whatever. I'll go check.
He's like, rainy Oregon. No, thanks.
Yeah, he goes, I don't think so. But about 4 or 5 months later, he wanted to come check it out. So he came over, and a few months we got a car. And then every weekend we were coming down to the coast and surfing here in Seaside. And so I finished my schooling, graduated. Then we had moved down here after about 3 years of living in Portland, and we were living in Seaside, mostly because we realized we're going there every weekend. may as well move there.
Right.
I mean, that's where we want to be, you know. And so we left our jobs that we had up in Portland and came down here and got married in 1989 in Seaside. Oh. Actually, we got married at the Red Lion, the old Red Lion in the Chinook Room. So we got married there, had a big surf crowd that showed up. And so I didn't have a job at that point, and I had started writing for the Seaside Signal.
Okay.
And I did a column called Whole Body Health. Really was popular. I loved people every week, loved to read it, and was trying to kind of tune in to what my dietetic path was going to be.
Sure.
And I had worked with a Women, Infant, and Children program at the time. I was donating my services to teach nutrition to moms and young new mothers and stuff. I was getting a lot of opportunity to donate my time to teach nutrition. So I started teaching some nutrition at the college and did some nutritional courses that we were in Seaside, but was offered through Clatsop Community College. So I had kind of dipped my feet into dietetics and was doing community nutrition at the time and loved it and everything. I wasn't really paying the bills.
Right.
And I didn't
have volunteer time.
Yeah, a lot of volunteer time. And so I was like, well, I'm really not getting paid yet. I looked into working up at the hospital at Seaside, but, you know, it's nothing to didn't say anything bad about it. But the dietitians that were working back there in the mid-80s and stuff, you were always working with people that were quite sick and then trying to teach them after their heart attacks or bypasses, you know, how to eat healthier. And that really wasn't my calling. And my calling was more like, how do you keep people healthy before they end up with a bypass surgery?
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And so working up there at the hospital in Seaside wasn't really appealing, even though it would have paid much more than I was getting paid at the time. But so I was just kind of floating kind of in between these, you know, great community nutrition opportunities I had, but not getting paid a lot. And my friend, who was a surfer friend of mine, Josh Gustavage, and he owns Clean Line Surf Company. He's one of the original owners. He came to me one day and knew I was kind of floating around just surfing and doing these things. And he said, why don't you come to work for me? I need some women energy on the floor, you know, the retail floor. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll try that. So I started assistant managing for him at Clean Line Surf.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, back in the day when it was on First Avenue, it was you know, little hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Nothing like it is now, that the big store out on the highway.
Which is so nice.
Yeah, it's really a nice premier really nice store. And so I started working for him with no plans that I was going to be working there for years, but everything kind of kept opening up for more management opportunities for me within Clean Line. It was very creative. I was hanging out with surfers all day long and people that wanted to know more about surfing. And so it was an exciting time. So I ended up working there for 16 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I kind of took Clean Line from this hole in the wall and helped Josh to kind of launch it into what it's now. It's just this amazing company, you
right.
know, and they do tons of online, and they have a Cannon Beach and a Seaside store and everything. But while I was working for him, I became a general manager when we opened the second store in Cannon Beach. And I kind of felt being a woman general manager in the surf industry at the time, it was really rare to have a woman in that position. I would go to like the different what would they call them? Sports. It was like buying things, the buying
sure.
retailer programs that they would have like down in Santa Monica and stuff like that we would go down to. And I'd go and I'd be like the only female general manager of a surf shop like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was almost all male dominated. And if you think about it, in the water too at this time, this would have been the late 80s, early 90s. It was the same way in the water.
It was.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, there was only really four of us women that were kind of the original ones that were kind of surfing during the mid 80s into like the early 90s. And then eventually you start slowly but surely seeing a few more women, but still wasn't catching on. And so while I was working for Josh, I kind of took it upon myself to, I'm going to change this in the industry. And what do we have to do so that women in the Northwest want to become more into surfing and want to enter the sport? And well, the biggest block that we had at the time was that wetsuits for women were a lot thinner and lightweight. And they were not keeping us warm enough in the water. So we worked with a woman named Brenda Scott, who was the owner of Hotline Wetsuits down in Santa Cruz. And she herself was a cold water surfer, being from Santa Cruz. And so she knew what it meant to have like a cold water suit. And we're even colder
right.
up here in Oregon, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, from Santa Cruz. So so I started having conversations about it with her and with Josh and saying, you know, let's make a prototype of a custom women's hooded 5'4", cold water, really well seam-constructed suit. And let's see if we can get women enticed into getting into the sport if they have gear that actually will keep them warm when they're out there.
So were the wetsuits basically just unisex then? Like if you wanted one, you just had to buy the men's wetsuits?
Yeah. And then what would typically happen is it would not fit well.
Right.
Because we're a very different shape than men.
Yes.
Most of us.
So it was bulky, too, which also is not good.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you'd either have a lot of water coming in the chest because the chest would be kind of made with big shoulders, chest, or the sleeves were too big so it wouldn't cling to your arm, or it was way too tight on the hips, but too loose in the middle, or just, yeah, it wasn't a good fitting suit. So you'd have a lot of water. They call it flushing. Cold water flushing through your suit. And to make a wetsuit work well, it's supposed to be like a second skin.
Right.
Where you get no water moving inside of the suit, really. And so I worked with Brenda Scott, and we came up with a great prototype. And Josh, I can't remember if we ordered like 10 or 12 the first batch. You know, a little
10
range.
Or 12.
10 or 12. Yeah. I mean, he
just,
probably
just
now.
A handful.
Yeah. He probably now orders like 100 at a time of wetsuits, seeing how big surfers come, you know. And so anyway, so we had made these suits and we got them. And the four of us that were surfing at the time, my friend Joanne Kramer, Lisa Middleton, Keiko Watts, and myself, we all bought the first four suits because it's like, oh, yeah, here we go. You know, hooded cold water wetsuit. This is awesome, right? And so we were surfing in them. And eventually, some other women started buying some suits. It still wasn't really taking off. And so a few years go by, and I started having conversations with local surfboard shapers and encouraged them to start making designs of surfboards that would accommodate women's size. So, you know, the average woman back then may be 120, 130 pounds, and the men were 180, 200 pounds. So if you think about that in the early mid-90s, you know, for me to ride a board that was made for somebody 60, 80 pounds heavier and much taller, it didn't really fit me well. I needed something scaled down for my size more. So you can maneuver the board and all the ways that you want to use your surfboard. And so we got some of the local shapers, Tom Scott and Lenny Schuler and a few others, starting to make some shapes that actually women would really love to surf on. So we did that. That got a few more women out there. Right. And then all of a sudden, this movie comes along called Blue Crush.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember Blue Crush?
I do, yes.
So Blue Crush comes along, and if your friend hasn't seen it before, you'll have to get it and show her. I think she'd really love it. Anyway, so Blue Crush comes along, and there's this huge interest in surfing after that. And it seemed like every girl across the country were wearing board shorts, Roxy board shorts.
Sure.
I mean, you could live in Kansas, and you were wearing a Roxy board short.
Right. No ocean anywhere.
Yeah, no ocean anywhere. You've got Roxy board shorts on. And so that got a real interest in it. So now we had the wetsuits, we had the boards, we had the more interest in it.
Right.
And so it kind of percolated a little bit more, but still not where I wanted to see it go. I really wanted to see a women's surfing community here, which I had seen when I was in Hawaii years before. I knew existed down in California and Florida and areas like that. But Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, it just was not happening.
Okay.
And we're talking like, you know, mid to late 90s. It's still not really happening. And so I'm kind of perplexed. And I started thinking one day, it's the instruction. Men are just more apt to just be kind of gung-ho, you know, like, what do I have to do to go surfing? Okay, I'm going to rent a board and a wetsuit and I'm out there. You know, I don't need any instruction. I'm just going. And women, most women, you know, when you think about it, if I'm going to go learn rock climbing, I'm just not going to go rent the gear and just start
scaling a wall.
Yeah, scaling a wall.
You're right.
You know, I want a really good instructor to tell me all the things I need to know before I go scaling this wall. And so we're just more practical maybe that way. So anyway, so I thought it's the instruction that's missing. So I came to Josh and I said, I want to do a 2-day clinic and I'm going to invite women all over Clatsop County to come and they don't have to pay. We're just going to offer them some great lessons. And so they came. And myself and two other instructors, Dennis Braun, one of the instructors, ended up teaching with me for years once I started my program. But anyway, we had a 2-day amazing event. Teenage girls, moms, 20, 30-somethings, were all out in the water. And the second day, Alana, I had the most amazing epiphany. And have you ever had an epiphany before?
Oh, yeah. It's enlightening.
It's very,
right?
Yeah. You've kind
empowering.
Of feel, yeah. You kind of feel like something divine kind of just entered into your consciousness. And that day, what it was that you are supposed to be teaching surfing. Because what I was witnessing that day were these girls that the first day and the women that we taught the basics, the second day, they were owning it. They're going out there and they're paddling their board and they're understanding how to start reading waves and they're starting to catch waves on their own. And it was so transformative to witness that. And then to realize that we had created that opportunity for them to do it. It was just life-changing. And I remember saying to Dennis out in the water, I called him over to me real quick and I said, Dennis, I just had the most crazy epiphany. I'm going to start teaching women surfing. And I said, do you want to teach with me? And he said, I'm with you all the way. And so that was kind of the start of how I started Northwest Women's Surf Camps. So I came home that night and I told my husband that I said, I'm starting a new path.
Yeah.
And he says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to teach women surfing. And he first thought I kind of lost my head. Yeah. Head. He's like, what are you thinking? You've got this career and everything you've developed. And I said, I know, but this is it. I just can tell I've had this epiphany. This is what I need to be doing, my calling. And so with that, I started Northwest Women's Surf Camp. After that winter, I did the business plan for it. I knew I had to kind of start small because I wasn't sure if there would really be enough interest to support anything. And I didn't want to become a surf school because surf schools tend to operate 7 days a week, you know, two different shifts a day. And I didn't just want to do something like that. I really wanted to have the intimate connection like I had created with the two-day event mm-hmm. with the same group of women. That's where you really get the connection, you know. They start trusting you as a coach. They start feeling more empowered. You know, you can give an hour, 2 hour lesson. It's just not the same experience. And so I started creating some events. And so the first summer I pitched 3 day camps. And now you have to remember, this is in 2005. So this is before you're doing emails and social right. media platforms. So basically I had flyers around the county and some in Portland. And people would call me on the phone and say, I'm interested in it. And I would mail them with a stamp, you know, their forms they had to fill out. And they would mail me back a check.
Oh, goodness.
This is how it was done.
And then you hope they showed up.
Yeah. And then I'd send them their confirmation in the mail and they'd know where they're supposed to be. And then they'd show up and we would have the 1 day camp. So I'd offered 3 that first summer, and realized very quickly they had sold out. So I had offered 5 more. And so anyway, that's how it started. And then I decided after that first year, I would just kind of organically grow the program. And so now we just celebrated last summer, our 20th summer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And we've taught, I mean, I haven't ever counted, but I would bet to say, you know, close to 2,500 people in that time. And the simple idea of the day camp has evolved, and we do 2. Our most popular event are our surf weekenders for teenage girls and women up to 65. It's a multi-generational experience.
Yeah.
So you could bring your daughter or your mother, you know, if she was up to it. And the surf weekenders, we have 2 coming up in July. I'll tell you about a little bit more. And we did things like week retreats. We started taking women over to Kauai. We went there for 5 years to Kauai.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. We've held them on the Oregon coast, week-long retreats. We've done couples getaways with some of the premier hotels here in Cannon Beach and Seaside. We've done corporate events for Nike, for Title IX. We've partnered with Portland Community College for years. Just done all kinds of really creative, fun events over all these years. And so last summer, I had the real opportunity. I figured with my 20th summer, I really need to, while I'm putting the events on, I really need to take time to kind of step and witness. And it was so amazing, Alana, just to see what has been created. And my vision originally and my mission was to really create Northwest Women's Surfing Community. And by gosh, we have done it. I mean, I was out surfing 2 days ago, 3 days ago, and like half the people in the water were women surfing. You know, a week before that, I was out. Almost everybody who was out in the cove that day, it was small, but almost everybody was women. And I'm going, wow, we have pushed the needle. It's over that place. So while I was witnessing last summer, I was kind of thinking, well, I don't know if this is going to be my last summer. I always told myself I would kind of step aside and bring up somebody else to do this when I was kind of at the high point. So I was kind of not sure last summer. So I had so much fun witnessing and seeing what we had created. And I have a wonderful team of coaches. And just seeing how amazing they are. And they've been, most of them have been with me for years. And they love coming and connecting with women and sharing this amazing lifestyle with them. And so this will be my 21st summer. And I decided this summer, I decided I'm going to offer events for the month of July. And we're doing two of our most popular events, the Women's Weekenders, and they're on July 12th and 13th and July 26th and 27th. And then I'm just opening myself as a coach that month to do coaching or lessons, private, semi-private or groups for the month of July. And then my husband and I are going to do a really fun thing, which we've never done, is to take a couple months off in summer. Yeah, and surf the Oregon coast. So August and September, we're just going to have a blast road tripping in our own backyard. And I won't be teaching August and September, but I'll be available all of the month of July. So
those fun months,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I absolutely love that your story started that you went to college for recreation.
Yeah, so funny.
At University of Oregon. I love it.
I know. And I ended up being a director of surfing. Not a director of recreation, but it's kind of the
right.
same.
And you're not on a cruise ship, but you're still on the ocean. Yeah. I mean, everything that you've mm-hmm. talk about epiphany. I mean, this is what leads to epiphanies, though, right? Mm-hmm. When, especially with women, I feel, because we are really drawn towards finding purpose in our life. And what I hear from you is that you found purpose in each of these things and everything you're doing now meets all of those points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I always like to give a shout out to young women because so many of them come through in their 20s and 30s, and we have a lot of women's circle on our events where they really get connected with each other and the coaches and the beautiful environment we teach in. But I just want to reassure young women out there or any aged woman that, you know, if you don't feel like you found your purpose or your passion yet in your life, don't focus so much on that. And I would say just listen to your heart and your intuition of the path that you're on and let that guide you, because that's how I've always kind of lived my life. If something didn't feel right, I would change my path course and get on something that really resonated fully with me. And it led me directly to where I wanted to be back when I was like 13 and 14 years of age. And I would have never known it in the process.
Right.
But now at 64, when I look back at that, I'm like, my gosh, it worked all together.
And so, all of those things, right? The journalism helps with the writing a business plan, marketing, promotions.
Yeah.
I love your story. You're going to find myself and my 9-year-old out there this summer.
Oh, I hope so.
I tried to talk her into it last year and she wouldn't do it, but you're right. You nailed it on the spot though, because so my husband's from here, surfed all his life, never taken a lesson. And he kind of, you know, like giggled when I said, well, I want to take a lesson. And he's like, why?
Uh-huh.
He's like, well, you're not going to get me out there. I mean, it's the ocean, right? It feels so powerful.
It is.
But then I love what you're saying, too, is in 2 days, you are going to empower me to feel comfortable to do it on my own.
Yeah, we teach in our classes, we do, or in our events, I should say, what we do is really teach a lot of the surf science, too. So it's not just the techniques and skills and everything, but you really feel empowered with knowing some of the ocean knowledge and how to read tides and currents and such.
So you just feel safe.
Yeah.
Lexi Hallahan, you have been amazing.
Thank
co-host
you.
For my first solo show.
Oh, you did so great.
Thank you so much. I am excited to talk to you more, and I appreciate what you're doing for women in our community and throughout the Northwest. Thank you so much for joining us. Go out there and make some history.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.